Chapter 10 Single file, Luke, Mara, Corin, Jason, and Saba trailed Danny Quee down into the canyon, where they hoped to find the Yuuzhan Vong priest, Harar. With the vines that secured the platform hoists hopelessly tangled, they followed a circuitous route of ramps and ladders. Rain was still falling in rippling sheets, and the Jedi had their heads lowered and the hoods of their sopping cloaks raised. Below, partially concealed under a swirling blanket of fog, the swollen river roared. They were traversing the second tier when Danny stopped and gestured to a small cliff dwelling where light flickered in the crude window openings.
"It was unoccupied, so we didn't bother asking for permission to use it," she said, loud enough to be heard by everyone.
They were 20 meters from the dwelling when a group of 8 Faroan males stepped from the gloom of a natural cave to intercept them. Slender humanoids with pale blue skin, they were not indigenous to Zonama Seacoat, but had been brought to the living world generations earlier. Their simple trousers and shirts clung to their bodies, and water ran from their angry faces. In his left hand, their apparent leader, Senshi, held a glow stick that cast a misty sphere of light around them.
"You captured a Yuuzhan Vong," he said, breath clouds accompanying his words.
Luke shook his head.
"He was found wounded and brought here to be healed."
"Not wounded by any of us," Senshi said, "though deserving of whatever injuries he sustained for what he and the others caused to happen."
Shortly after Luke and the other Jedi had first arrived on Zonama Seacoat, Senshi, at Seacoat's insistence, had helped carry out a counterfeit kidnapping of Danny Quee as a means of testing the Jedi. A farmer by trade, he had gold-speckled eyes and close-cropped hair that had darkened to gray-blue with age. Having lost several family members and friends during the crossings from known space, he was ambivalent about Seacoat's decision to return.
"We don't know yet who or what was responsible," Luke said. "We're hoping the Yuuzhan Vong will explain."
He advanced a step, but no one in the group moved.
"You could hurl us aside with a thought," Senshi said, "but you won't, if you're a true servant of the Force."
Luke lowered his hood and gazed at him.
"And if you serve the Force, you'll allow us to pass."
The Faroan gestured toward the cliff dwelling.
"As an enemy of Zonama Seacoat, the Yuuzhan Vong should be ours to deal with."
"To deal with how?" Luke asked calmly. "Will torturing or killing him return Zonama Seacoat to Mobus? Have you asked yourselves how Seacoat might react to your taking matters into your own hands?"
"Look around you, Jedi," another Faroan said. "Have you ever witnessed Zonama thus?" "Not one of us has. For all any of us knows, Seacoat could be unconscious, or worse."
Luke considered mentioning Jabitha's spectral visit to his and Mara's dwelling, but decided that Seacoat must have had some reason for not appearing to and reassuring the Faroans as well.
"Give us a chance to talk with the Yuuzhan Vong before you decide on a course of action," he said after a moment.
The Faroans mulled over Luke's proposal.
"Only if one of us is present," Senshi answered for all of them.
"Which of you?" Luke asked, glancing at everyone.
A young man with white hair stepped forward.
"I will go. I am called Maid."
Luke nodded.
"Then it's decided."
The Faroans separated into two groups, allowing the Jedi unobstructed access to the cliff dwelling. Luke and the rest came out of the rain to find Harar seated on the floor by the hearth, his long legs stretched out in front of him. His face and body were battered, and his front teeth were broken. Tekli stood to one side, ministering to his injuries. Rodent-like, though bipedal, the Chadrafan looked positively diminutive next to her tall, bandaged patient. Each of the priest's hands was missing 2 digits, but their absence had nothing to do with the injuries he had sustained on Zonama Seacoat. Thick as a mane, his glossy black hair draped over his tattoo-covered shoulders. Tahiri Vela, whose own forehead bore traces of Yuuzhan Vong markings,
was conversing with him quietly in Yuuzhan Vong. Danny had assured Luke that Harar was unarmed. Tahiri was about to introduce Luke and the others when Harar cut her off with a motion of his hand.
"I will speak to them in your tongue."
His drooping eyes darted briefly to Tahiri.
"Though I may look to you for clarification from time to time."
His gaze returned to the Jedi, settling on each in turn. Luke regarded the priest for a long moment, then said,
"I am Luke Skywalker. This is my wife, Mara."
Harar's eyes lit up in obvious recognition of the names.
"The master of the Jedi, and the one who fell victim to Kum spores,"
he added, referring to Mara, who had been cured of the disease only with the birth of her son, Ben. Luke continued,
"You've already met Tahiri and Corin, and by now Tekli and Danny."
He gestured to his right.
"That leaves only Saba, Jason, and Maid, whose world you obviously came to destroy."
"Jason Solo," Harar said, in what might almost have been taken for awe. "I have observed you from afar, young Jedi, figuratively and literally."
Luke tucked his hands into the sleeves of his cloak and sat down opposite Harar on a short-legged stool.
"You seem to know more about us than we know about you. Perhaps you're willing to correct that."
"Perhaps."
The rest of the Jedi and Maid sat down in a loose semicircle.
"You told Corin and Tahiri that you, Nen-Yim, and the Prophet were seeking answers from Zonama Seacoat. Nothing more."
Harar nodded.
"We kept to ourselves that each of us had a separate agenda."
He paused briefly.
"Nen-Yim was a shaper, at one time apprentice to Mejan Quad, who attempted to remake Tahiri into one of us on the world you know as Yavin 4. Shimra had tasked Nen-Yim to analyze an organic ship that was grown here, on Zonama Seacoat. In doing so, she made a remarkable discovery that appears in many ways to link this world with the Yuuzhan Vong. She came here seeking verification of her theories. As for Yusha, the Prophet, well, his alleged reason for accompanying us was to determine if Zonama Seacoat could be of some use to the heretical movement he helped organize among the shamed ones on Yuuzhan Tar."
"And your reason?" Mara asked.
"Of less noble principle," Harar said. "I suspected that Shaper Nen-Yim was also a heretic, though of a different order. I suspected further that Shimra was aware of her unorthodox practices, which meant that he too was a heretic. Finally, I was interested in unmasking Yusha, and in determining whether or not he was genuine in his beliefs."
"The Prophet killed Nen-Yim and left you for dead," Luke said. "Was that because you and Nen-Yim succeeded in unmasking him?"
"No. His purpose was to make certain that we didn't survive to share in the glory of destroying Zonama Seacoat."
Harar looked at Luke.
"As it happens, you know him."
Luke waited.
"He is none other than Nom Anor."
It was nothing Luke hadn't already heard from Corin and Tahiri, but he had wanted to hear it from the priest.
"We know that," Mara said, breaking the silence. "But something isn't right. Nom Anor may have come here masquerading as the Prophet, but I can't accept that Nom Anor is the one who has been influencing the Shamed Ones to place their faith in the Jedi."
"I confess to being astonished as well," Harar said. "But you must understand, because of what happened at Ebak 9, Nom Anor had little option but to place himself as far as possible from Shimra's reach, which is not an easy thing to do. In Yuuzhan Tar's underground places, Nom Anor probably fell in with the heretics, and gradually saw some advantage to becoming their chief instigator and voice."
"Now that doesn't surprise me," Mara said.
"But he must have realized that Zonama Seacoat can provide an end to the war," Luke said.
"So why attempt to destroy it when his followers stood to gain the most?" Harar shook his head.
I can only speculate. Perhaps his actions here have enabled him to reintegrate himself with Shimra. For Shimra fears this world more than you know. It has always been Nom Anor's desire to be escalated, and the possibility of escalation may have been reason enough for him to forsake the heretics who placed their trust in him. It's also plausible that Nom Anor has been working secretly for Shimra all the while, even as the prophet. Shimra may have wished to create a perceived problem on Yuuzhan Tar to distract the elite from more pressing problems regarding the war and the rebellious nature of Yuuzhan Tar's world brain. Or he may have planned to use the growing heresy as justification for ridding our society of undesirables and pariahs. Harar sighed with purpose. Nom Anor is a consummate infidel. He thinks only of his own ambitions. He glanced around the small room, but it appears that he was unsuccessful in eliminating Zonama Seacoat as a potential threat to his and Shimra's plans.
That remains to be seen, Corrin said. Either as a result of Nom Anor's actions, or as a way of protecting itself, Zonama Seacoat jumped into hyperspace. To where? We've yet to learn. Maybe deeper into the unknown regions. Maybe closer to known space. If this rain ever stops, we may be able to figure out where we are. But so far, Seacoat hasn't seen fit to help us.
Seacoat, Harar repeated.
Zonama's guiding intelligence, Jason said.
Harar absorbed it. Yet more similarities with Yuuzhan Tar.
Or Coruscant, as we like to call it, Corrin said roughly.
Harar glanced at him and smiled faintly. I speak not of your reshaped galactic capital, but of the primordial homeworld of the Yuuzhan Vong. Well before she died at Nom Anor's hand, Nen Yim had come to believe that this world is startlingly similar to the descriptions of Yuuzhan Tar that have passed down to us in history and legends.
The priest turned to Maid. More, that the Faroans are what we ourselves might have become. Deep sorrow tugged at Harar's scarified features.
These realizations saddened and shattered Nen Yim's faith, as indeed they have shattered mine.
We know that one of your early reconnaissance fleets happened on Zonama Seacoat, Jason said, while it was still in known space.
Happened on is hardly the proper phrase, young Jedi. As I said, there is much that links Zonama Seacoat to the Yuuzhan Vong. Nen Yim discovered many similarities that cannot be attributed to coincidence. Zonama Seacoat and the Yuuzhan Vong can only have had access to the same protocols in fashioning ships and other devices.
Ships, yes, Luke said, but the engines that drive Seacoatan ships are not organic, Harar.
The priest waved in dismissal. Nor are they made of Yorick coral, but what matters is that they are grown.
He shrugged.
Untrained in the Shaper's arts, I can't provide the proof you desire, but I know in my heart what is true and what isn't.
Why didn't you ever attempt to return to Zonama Seacoat after the first encounter? Jason asked.
Because few knew of the encounter.
Harar fell silent for a moment, then said,
I will tell you things I didn't reveal to Nen Yim, or Nom Anor, if only to further an understanding between us. There were rumors during the final days of the reign of Quoriel, Shimra's predecessor, that a living world had been discovered. Rumors, too, that Quoriel's priests had interpreted the encounter as a sign that we should avoid contact with your galaxy. The ancient texts make clear the existence of a world that was anathema to us, one that could well prove our undoing.
You invaded anyway, Mara said.
Harar nodded. We were dying. Shimra recognized this. Emboldened by his domain, he usurped Quoriel's throne and directed the world ship convoy to continue as planned,
granting his full blessing to the invasion, assuring everyone that the gods had informed him that your galaxy was to be our new home, providing that we could cleanse it, or at least convert all of you to the truth. No mention was made of the living world. Those of less than elite rank accepted on faith that Shimra had received the divine word. Shimra is not one to be trifled with in any case. When the invasion progressed easily, many of us set aside our doubts. We convinced ourselves that Shimra's decision was correct, and that the gods were favoring us. Only of late has doubt reared its head once more. The heretical movement, the defeat at Ebak 9, the continuing problems on Yuuzhan Tar. Harar looked at Jason. Which I suspect owe something to you, young Jedi. And to Vergere.
You knew her? Jason asked in surprise.
Better than you, and yet obviously not nearly as well. She was one of the samples returned to the world ship convoy by reconnaissance ships. She became the familiar of Priestess Falung, then eventually of Priestess Aelon, of the Deception Sect, who served aboard my vessel. Harar smiled lightly, when I had a vessel.
Aelon, Luke said with narrowed eyes.
The priest took a moment to puzzle it out. Ah, yes, I'd almost forgotten about the plan to poison the Jedi with Botaus. Foolishly devised. Whatever became of poor Aelon?
She died horribly. Of Botaus poisoning, Mara said sharply.
Vergere was a Jedi, Jason said with some pride. Harar was unfazed. So I subsequently learned. He appraised Jason, then Luke, Mara, and the others. I have been preoccupied with you from the very start. Not in the same way Savong La was preoccupied, nor as Noma Nor continues to be. His gaze favored Luke. We are not as dissimilar as you would like to believe. Luke grinned lightly.
I would like to believe that we are, in fact, very similar, and that you exist in the Force, as does all life.
The enigmatic Force, Harar said slowly. But consider this, Master Jedi. We revere life as much, if not more, than you do. The Force gives you strength. The gods give us strength. Like you, we feel the craving to merge fully with life, to feel, sense, experience the interconnectedness of all things, as indeed is embodied by Zonama Seacoat. Luke was reminded of his rigorous conversations with Vergere.
There's one major difference between us. We accept that what doesn't take the Force into consideration is false.
Harar shrugged. What doesn't take the gods into consideration is false. To us, you embody a dark power, seemingly as the Sith did to the Jedi of old. And yet, if the Sith borrowed of the Force, much as you do, how then were they dark? Because they disagreed with your views?
The Sith sowed destruction and chaos in service to dark designs. They exercised absolute power to achieve their ends. They didn't revere the Force. They had reverence only for the power it afforded them. They saw their way as the only way.
As the Yuuzhan Vong do, Harar said, and you aver not to.
You worship pain, Mara said.
Harar shook his head. If they could be persuaded to answer truthfully, Jason and Tahiri would tell you otherwise. We accept that birth into life is pain, because it is separation from the gods, or the Force, if you will. But since we would not exist without the gods and their sacrifice, we thank the gods by emulating them, and giving of ourselves in their name. Pain is our means of reuniting with Yun Yuuzhan. We wonder why the gods created us, only to have us suffer all our lives in order to return to them. But this is unknowable. The creative cannot but create. And this is what the gods do. These things are beyond our understanding, and we accept them as being beyond our understanding. If our teachings are false, then they will pass away. Until that time, we must abide by them. Perish by them, you mean? Corin said. Perhaps. But this is all so much talk. I fear that the gods now look upon the Yuuzhan Vong with disfavor. I first realized this when Commander Kali La believed that Jaina Solo had become an aspect of Yun Harla, the trickster. Then I watched Supreme Commander Chul Kang La be taken in at Borlias by the so-called Operation Starlancer. And now tens of thousands of shamed ones have allowed themselves to be beguiled by a self-serving heretic. Harar lowered his gaze and shook his head. Having appointed ourselves Yun Yuuzhan's instrument, assuming the license to purge, to punish, and to sanctify, to kill by the millions those who do not share our world view, we have become blasphemers against our own religion. We have become a weak species, desperate to prove our strength to our gods. Luke leaned forward, resting his forearms on his knees. If Shimra understood this, could he be persuaded to end the war? Shimra hates the sound of reasoned words. Nor would any of the elite be persuaded, save perhaps those who have secretly remained faithful to Quarial, and whose goal it has been to bring evidence of this world to Yuuzhan Tar, and expose Shimra, to demonstrate that he violated the taboo and invaded, and that his actions may have damned all of us. The priest fell silent for a long moment, then said, "Answer one question for me. Can Zonama Seacoat help you defeat us? Is it indeed a weapon?" Luke touched his jaw. "It has that capability." Harar exhaled slowly and sadly. "Then no wonder Shimra fears it so. It is as prophesied." He looked questioningly at Luke. "Will you kill me now? Sacrifice me to the Force?" "That's not our way," Luke said. Harar's initial confusion gave way to resolution. "Then if you would allow me, I wish to help bring about a resolution between your varied species and mine. Or do I begin to sound like Aelan, promising one thing but determined to deliver another?" Mara, Jason, and the others were still trading looks of dumbfounded disbelief when Luke said, "Perhaps you carry something even more deadly than Botaus, Harar, in the form of ideas." Harar pressed his few fingertips together and bounced them against his disfigured lower lip. "Yun Harla is said to reserve her most cunning tricks for those most devoted to her. But we find ourselves here, together, for reasons beyond my comprehension. From here, then, we must at least attempt to mark a new beginning."